This is listener-supported community radio 88.7 WLUW Chicago, broadcasting from the campus of Loyola University.
Good evening, and welcome to Blind Spot. I'm Roger McYellowstone. Tonight on the program, John Wanzel, the rogue scientist and cultural provocateur. We're all familiar with his exploits in mountaineering, space travel, race car driving, fly fishing, as well as his book of lyrical poems, For Whom the Flower Smells, and Gobstopper, a treatise, his groundbreaking work of philosophical investigation. Yet despite all of these numerous accomplishments, he still remains an enigma. Tonight we hope to illuminate some of the lesser-known facts of this truly astonishing American. Tonight with me on the program are Dr. Helmut Schrode.
Good evening.
NASA scientist, neurologist, pathologist, and longtime friend and associate of John Wanzel. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Lefty Kensington, New Yorker, writer, lifelong Wanzologist. Is that the term you would use there?
It is, Roger. Happy to be here. Thanks for asking me.
Thank you very much for coming. And, of course, Stanislav Wanzello, the grandson of John Wanzel himself.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
My first question, I guess, would be directed to you, Stanislav Wanzello.
Okay.
Just to get a little bit of background about your grandfather and maybe where your family came from and ended up in the United States, and maybe just a little bit of what would end up, led him to become this groundbreaking American that he truly is or was.
Well, I'm very proud to be a part of the Wanzel family. I'm also very proud to be the heir to John's estate, and I guess the first thing I would like to, John is a very interesting person, and his history is very rich in detail. When John's family, my family, came from Serbia in the 1950s, when John was 3 years old, they came to America to escape religious persecution. They were Nietzschean Shoshuists, and that was frowned upon at the time in Serbia. John's dad, Stanislav Wanzello I, worked as an electrical engineer in the meat packing plants of Cleveland, Ohio. Of course, this afforded the family access to quality meat products. But as we all know, John famously renounced meat eating at the early age of 8 and became a vegetarian. Of course, this didn't go well in the family structure, and Stanislav I reacted with fury and anger, lashing out at John, beating him senselessly, and forcing quality meats into his mouth, which induced a sort of mild coma.
Well, I want to stop you and ask you a question there, because okay. It's well known that John's mother was a homemaker. But is also quite well known for her harassment of cookbook publishers, sending letters to cookbook publishers. Maybe you know a little bit more about this Lefty Kensington because of the literary angle. But
indeed, yes.
I mean, the publishing industry was really afraid of Mrs. Wenzel, right?
Oh yes, I'm. You know, some of my most prized possessions in my Wenzel collection are some of the crank, if you will, letters that John Wenzel's mom wrote to some of the many more, you know, popular. Her crank letter that in fact is more of a treatise on the joy of cooking is just amazing to read. All 40 pages of it. And her just skewering of Julia Child is just truly amazing.
Yeah, Grandma, she was a firecracker, all right.
Has there been any move to collect and publish those as almost the first sort of meta criticism on cookbooks?
Well, I've made some inquiries with the publishers. Unfortunately, most of her letters were not saved at the time. Only a small fraction of them have, unless the Wenzel family or the Wenzello family has a cachet of them that I have not been informed of.
That's, I don't want to comment on that at this time.
Yeah, I just think it might be something interesting.
As the heir of the Wenzel family, I'm responsible for, being in charge of his legacy. And that goes for, you know, everyone else in the John Wenzel family as well.
Your great-grandmother as well.
Yes, and my grandfather, and they were all very interesting people.
Another quick question, and since you had started talking about John Wenzel at age 8 renouncing meat, I wanted to sort of throw this question over to Dr. Schrode, who was involved in John's development. From an early age, and ask. There's been speculation that John's birth was linked to NASA space missions, and even radical speculation by the conspiracy theorists. You'll find this sort of stuff on the web that there was some sort of alien DNA experiments going on. I was wondering if you wanted to endorse any of those, Dr. Schrode, or if you wanted to. Yes. To put an end to those at all at this moment, and if you think that they have any anything to do with John's turning away from meat at so radically at such an early age.
Well, I can answer some of those questions. Although for years I've been sworn to secrecy as one of NASA's top physicians and specialists in space travel, I have recently contracted a fatal dose of luminous poison. I believe I contracted it at a local strip club in one of my watered-down $8 well drinks. The prisoner remains at large, but I know of this toxin. It is always fatal, and there is no cure. I will be dead before dawn tomorrow. Or maybe not. I've been wrong many times before. In any case, I am tired of secrets, old and worn out, and I want to tell the world how brilliant I am. From the beginning of the space program, I have been called on to provide my expertise on the touchy problem of people in outer space. From the age of 5, I have been interested in improving on nature. As a child genius, I raised an aquarium full of specially mutated fish. I treated the eggs in a unique chemical bath of my own design. The changes were superficial at first, piranhas with no teeth, goldfish with growths on their heads resembling tiny polka dot clown hats. Eventually, my skills and achievements improved remarkably. By the time I reached NASA, I was put in charge of Operation Spaceman. This project involved the use of cultures removed from the crotches of recovered aliens. The unusual substances.
So wait, right. I'm sorry. Like, right here, you're just saying that in fact, Roswell, 1948, the U.S. government has had alien bodies.
Well, not the whole body, just the crotches of the aliens by some weird accident we don't understand.
I'm sorry, Roger, if I could jump in.
Yes.
Were the rest of the bodies lost?
Well, we believe they were eaten, but the crotches were so repellent and so smelly.
I'm sorry,
we
once again.
Assume that they were not eaten.
Eaten.
And that's why we recovered.
Eaten
the
by
substance.
Whom? The farmers who found fine citizens of Roswell, New Mexico?
No, the wildlife of New Mexico. You have various lizards and stray dogs, cats, many small animals.
This
I'm
is
not
all,
a specialist in animals, please. No,
This is fascinating.
I don't have long to live.
No, I hope that for your sake, I mean, maybe you and Mr. Kensington can talk about some sort of article for The New Yorker, because it sounds like fascinating material, although what we're actually here to talk about is the enigma, which is John Wanzel and his legacy.
Well, if you just let me finish, I was getting to this. Whatever your name is.
McYellowstone.
Mr. McYellowstone. Well, let's see. So here we are. With John, I had achieved most of what I wished to accomplish. But this was only a first step. What I wished to do with him was to make it so he could travel easily in space, so he could repair himself on the mission. If he ran out of oxygen, he could live on carbon dioxide. If he ran out of food, he could eat various chairs or sofas or whatever was on the spaceship with him. And he could, in fact, reuse his own waste material. So this way he could,
As chairs, or could he consume his own waste material?
You know, I don't like to be made fun of. I'm a serious scientist, and this is serious material. Please, I wish it to be
my apologies.
With respect. Thank
Helmut,
you.
Helmut, continue.
And I don't have, as I say, long to live. But what I wanted to do is also be able to make it so he could regrow his organs or limbs that have been damaged in space, various things that can happen in outer space.
Well, okay, just I don't mean to interrupt again, but can you talk about perhaps how a Serbian immigrant ends up being the child for this sort of experimentation by NASA? How did that come to – How is he and his – and I don't know. I'm curious, actually, Stanislav Wanzel, how much of this is known in the family, or if you – how much of this maybe you dispute?
Yeah, there are various myths surrounding the enigma of John Wanzel. It's really hard to say which ones are true and which ones are false at this point.
Well, let me ask you this. If this is true – and he is your grandfather, then you, in fact, have alien DNA.
That is a possibility. I can't say one way or the other if I have...
I would have to take a sample of either one of his pubic hairs or a toenail.
Well, that's... I'm not going to be giving you a sample because I think that you've already done enough damage to the Wanzel family.
Well, that's open for speculation. Do you have another question? Mr. McYellowstone.
If I could, I'd like to speculate more. I'd like to speculate on your damage to the Wanzel family. Well, As we all know, Wanzelology is just full of crackpots and malcontents, and unfortunately, gentlemen, I think we might have one here on our hands.
Are you talking about me?
Look, gentlemen, let's try and keep this civil. We're all here because we're all interested in this amazing American, this true Renaissance man. We all have a fascination in uncovering the truth, the history, and I hope eventually trying to determine what the present of John Wanzel is. So if we could try and keep it civil and remember that we're all here for the same. This wasn't intended to be a debate.
My apologies. Right.
So, understood.
Doctor.
So
Stanislav.
So, Stanislav, you were, before we ended up on sort of a tangent, you were talking about your grandfather, John Wanzel, and his renouncing meat. Do you eat meat?
On occasion. I don't eat a lot of meat, but I did come from a family that worked in the meatpacking industry, so.
But you also came from the family of a famous.
Well, I also did not know my father, in the way that most most people know their father. My grandfather. He was all over the place. He was you know, he was traveling around the world.
But your father is your father. Like they, your father's that family returned to eating meat after.
Yes, after. because my father did not know his father. Mm. He was, you know, my grandfather was traveling all over the world, coming up with these theories about space-time continuum and aliens and nuns and cocker spaniels and all these different theories that are fascinating, although unfortunately most of them are incomplete because he was never able to stay on task enough to actually publish any of these works. So what we know of him are in the form of these fragments of writing and letters to friends and family and different remnants that we have of him. For one of the most interesting things is he seemed to have this strange addiction to Hostess cupcakes. And we know this not because he spoke about it, but because in everywhere he went, everywhere he lived, there were piles and piles of these Hostess cupcakes.
And I think that in For Whom the Flower Smells, there's actually a reference to the Hostess cupcake. Is there not? I'd have to pull out my dog-eared copy of it and flip through it, but I believe that there is at least one poem which makes reference to it.
That's correct. There is one.
Would you like to refresh your memory about that poem?
Stanislav, of course. Oh, the Hostess cupcake. Where do you go when I eat you? Where will you be when I wake up in the morning? I know that when I follow the trail of wrappers, it can only lead back to myself.
Wow.
Haunting, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the less lyrical poems in the collection.
It was interesting. I mean, it's interesting because he was such a talented philosopher and scientist, and just his personality was overwhelming at times, and he was also such a creative poet. I mean, it's fascinating.
And some of the notions put forth in Gobstopper treatise is really, I mean, there's, I mean, I think groundbreaking works just interpreting that mammoth philosophical text to this day. But to try and get back to the chronology before we jump ahead to, you know, him writing his written works or I mean, I'm not even sure if we'll have time to get to, you know, like. Fly fishing and the interesting contradiction of somebody becoming a radical vegetarian at age 8 and then being also a world-class fly fisherman, or at least regarded as a world-class fly fisherman, although his vegetarian politics actually forbode him from actually catching fish. And I'm really curious to maybe unwrap that at some point. But I wanted to get back to his chronology. So you were at sort of age 8, and him being sort of force-fed meat, and I was wondering. I mean, I think that we're all familiar with the incident, the kidnapping incident, at age 10, mm-hmm. when John is taken to Central Asia. But I was wondering if you could maybe talk about what happens between.
The kidnapping was a direct result of John being left. In America by his family due to this meat feeding incident. Basically, he entered a coma. It was a mild coma, and he came out of it after a few days. But
at age 8.
Yeah. And but unfortunately, at the time, the concept of a coma was foreign to most people in Cleveland, and John was thought dead, and so he was buried alive. Thankfully, though, John was able to put his Nietzschean Shoshism into practice and escape from his would-be grave. His father was, of course, hanged, not for killing his son, but for burying his son alive, because, as we all know, in the 1950s, it was the right of every Serbian father to kill his firstborn son as he saw fit, as long as it was a quick and painless death. But it was also seen as one of the greatest mortal sins to fail at the attempt to end the life of the firstborn son. This, of course, I mean, the death of the one breadwinner in the family plunged the family into great financial debt. And, of course, they all had to move back to Serbia. except for John. He stayed behind, and he was left alone to fend for himself. He actually got a job at the meatpacking plant that his father worked at, which was a very odd decision on his part, being a vegetarian and working with the same material that led to his father's execution.
That was quite an age eight. I mean, would you?
Yeah, there
truly,
was a lot.
Truly astonishing, Roger.
Yeah.
Doctor Schroed, I mean, these were the coma. I mean, these early traumas. I mean, how did they? What effect did this have to do, or what effect did the experiments with the DNA, the alien DNA?
Yes.
I mean, I'm just curious if you could talk, and then if this affected his. I mean, because of course he wouldn't be dead. I mean, right? I mean, he would.
Yes.
I mean, and what is actually referred to as a coma may have been some sort of you would know better alien hibernation, regenerative hibernation.
Well, this was in fact the early training for his later space missions for NASA as a very young child still, because in fact part of that is sort of to bring yourself into a coma type state. So that he wouldn't get too upset on these very
suspended
long
suspended animation.
Of yes, a type of self-induced suspended animation. But these traumas would come back and haunt him and become an issue of difficulty on some of the missions. Even the most sort of antisocial people like myself require companionship. And in the interminable silence of space, loneliness becomes multiplied many times. People hallucinate and reach a sort of spiritual ground zero. Gradually, the inner trauma of his early captivity and eventual escape led John to the brink of despair and almost irreversible depressed catatonic states at several points of his life. The only way to get him out of these was a combination of dimethyl chloride and several naked women dancing around his hospital bed. Coming out of the depressed periods was often just as challenging for him, as he spent hours each day doing nothing but building tiny models of various Apollo rockets, shuttles, and lunar vehicles out of discarded pieces of cardboard and wire coat hangers. Even in these troubled times, he continued to amaze me, building remarkably detailed models that were astoundingly accurate. All were built to precise 1/64 scale without any measuring device whatsoever. So very impressive.
And this is, what years is this? Is this before or after the kidnapping?
Oh, this is after the kidnapping.
Okay, this is the during that period.
Yes.
I think that the story about baseball and John's misunderstanding of baseball and interpreting that as a code,
yes,
guiding him back from the Middle East, or from the East, Central Asia rather,
yes,
via the Middle East, is really fascinating. But the time period that you're talking about is when he's living with his grandparents, not speaking, and spends time apparently making model rockets and,
yes,
reading the 1967 edition of the World Book Encyclopedia.
Yes,
that the,
why not?
And when he starts developing the obsession about President Franklin Pierce. And I was curious what the connection perhaps between President Pierce and because at this,
yes,
point he's what, it's like 1962,
yeah,
and he's
building
space shuttles which wouldn't actually come to be made for 18 or so.
He was having visions of future episodes, I believe, and this was again something that we attribute to the alien DNA, where they were actually able to break out of the space-time continuum and perceive things in past as well as future, we believe quite clearly. As far as the obsession with Pierce, I've been told by many people, many of the women that I've spent evenings with have told me that I resemble President Pierce, which is amazing to me.
So what you're saying is that you think that John's obsession with Franklin Pierce is a little bit Oedipal. towards you. I mean, because by this point,
well, I became a kind of father figure.
Because by this point, his actual father had been hung.
Well,
and
yes.
And so, you as his geneticist father would. So that.
Sure.
How do you,
why not?
Feel about that sort of interpretation of your grandfather, Stanislav Wonzelo?
Well, honestly, there are a few things where I have to respectfully disagree with the doctor, and I mean I'm familiar with his writings, and I'm familiar, and I think they're fairly accurate according to, you know, the family history and everything that I have come to know and appreciate about my grandfather. However, I don't think that he is actually an alien or possesses any alien DNA. And I'm not really sure how I can justify this other than saying that if he was an alien, wouldn't I then be an alien?
Well, that was actually a question I addressed to you just a few minutes ago.
And I would have to say that I am definitely not an alien.
Well, okay. So you dispute the notion that that John's that your grandfather's obsession with Franklin Pierce is quite well known. I mean, as there were also some poems dedicated to President Pierce in For Whom the Flower Smells. I'm just curious. So you dispute that has anything to do with an Oedipal relationship to the doctor here. And so then what would your I mean, it was just a boyhood crush on Franklin Pierce, President Pierce.
You know, it's really hard to say what it was. He had an obsession with many strange things, many other presidents actually. He ended up, his first wife, Greta Wanzel, resembled Martha Washington quite a bit.
Is that your grandmother, or
My grandmother was his second wife.
Oh, okay, because you've got some Washington features in you. So,
thank you.
The question I have, Stanislav, if you can categorically say that you have no alien in you, then why do you refuse to take the DNA test?
I'm just going to interject for a second here and just remind the goal of this this program tonight, why I'm so delighted that you've all come on, is so that we could actually talk more about specifically about the legacy of John Wanzel,
right.
and that I think that we're going to get trapped down in a sort of a quagmire of debating. I respect his, you know, Mr. Wanzello's right to not give up the DNA. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I don't want us to get trapped there. I think that we should really turn our attention back to John Wanzel and the fascinating things, because at this point, I'll just remind our listeners that this is Blind Spot, and tonight Roger McYellowstone, and joined by three experts, Stanislav Wanzelo, the grandson of John Wanzel, Lefty Kensington, New Yorker writer and lifelong Wanzelologist.
Indeed.
And, of course, Dr. Helmut Schrode, NASA scientist and pathologist and lifelong friend and confidant and aficionado and perhaps tinkler in the life of the amazing Renaissance man that was John Wanzel.
Tinkler, yes. Or tinkerer?
Tinkerer.
And now okay. Poisoned by luminous poison. You didn't mention that.
Well, as sad as we are that you've been poisoned by luminous poison, and the glow in the studio is quite amazing, I really want to keep us on track with our probing investigation, because there's so much more to come. I mean, he is kidnapped to Central Asia by his captors don't speak English, so he ends up listening to shortwave radio, to baseball games, which he, not understanding baseball, misinterprets as a coded message on how to escape from his kidnappers and return. After leaving Central Asia, and you, Stanislav, probably could tell the story better than I, or perhaps Mr. Kensington, he ends up wandering all the way to Morocco, where he meets up with the Red Cross, who returns him to Illinois. But I was just—I mean, that's just part of the fascination that leads to part of the amazing story, you know. That, and there's just even some more to come. So, And then, of course, there's the darker sides, John's gender confusion. You know, just before re-entering school, about 3 years behind, after the trauma of all of this, the kidnapping. But I didn't know if maybe you wanted to jump ahead a little bit to perhaps, or maybe you can talk about when he leaves school and the what leads up to him ending up in New York working for the mafia. If you could maybe sort of briefly fill us in on that.
Oh, this is directed at me?
Yeah, yeah, sorry.
He came to New York and he was out of work and really had no friends. Nobody really liked him that much. And the only work that was available for him was working as a runner for the mafia. He was an excellent runner. I mean, nobody can dispute that. Like he was working his way up in the family.
How old is he at this point?
I believe he was 20, 22, 23, somewhere in there.
Do we know which family it was? Was it the Gambinos?
No, the other one.
Now, Doctor, do you want to talk at all about his physical state or how? Because obviously NASA had always had this plan that, I mean, you had developed genetically, worked on John Wanzel for a long-term space flight, but then is the trauma of the kidnapping, is that what leads to him getting sort of off of the path that you at NASA and others had laid out for him? Or,
well, there was a period of difficulty, but then we presented him with this unique space mission, a mission to Mars, in fact. And this was a secret mission that people don't know about because they really didn't know what we would find there. We didn't want to upset people because we believe that there were live, self-actualized creatures on the planet. In fact, that was, we lied to people and told them we didn't think there was anything there. This was a three-year mission that we sent him on, and he had pretty much recovered
from
the depression.
Well, and about how
depression.
Old is he at this point? Is this his first mission, or can you talk maybe chronologically?
Well, this is his first serious mission. We had him out in space with little animals in the cockpit just to see how he'd react.
Well, what I was curious was how NASA brought him back in after he had sort of gone out and was working for the mob and doing and sort of outside of the mafia. How you all brought him back in?
Well, we just physically grabbed him. We drove up with a black van. And threw a net over him and threw him in the back of the van.
While he was running for the mob?
Yeah, sure, why not? Because we liked him, and we wanted him back. So I drugged him, and we treated him.
But, of course, he didn't actually want to stay with NASA after this whole drugging and kidnapping incident.
No, the chemical alterations that we made actually made him quite fond of us because we were actually able to control his
Well, it sounds like maybe there's some dispute from the family on this point.
Well, see, the family, the Wanzel family, our records show, and his writings show that around the time that he quit his job for the mafia, he became a Zoroastrian.
Yes.
Which actually turned out to be something that he didn't know anything about. He basically just made up his own religion.
Well, and I think that's what the poem "Black Shuttle on the Razor Blade" in the book is about.
I think so. I don't have that with me right now.
Well, if I could just get on with the actual Martian mission, which is to me the most fascinating period. But I'm of course focused on NASA and the whole issue of space travel, but what happened is astounding. Once he got there, and he met these Martian creatures that resembled just like 1 foot tall possums, but they could actually speak, which is amusing, but interesting as well.
It sounds like maybe you're poisoned. Kicking it a little bit there. Are you okay? Do you need a cup
of
water?
No, I'm all right.
You sounded like you were
coughing. You're virtually blinding.
The luminous poison, it creates these moments of difficulty.
Euphoria.
euphoria,
levity,
mixed with depression and suicidal tendencies. What happened was he ended up living with these creatures, which were called Eisenheimers, these small possum creatures, and he in fact fell in with their community and was writing a cycle of autographical plays, which involved.
Doctor, there's another one. Can you go on?
I'm sorry. I'm pretty upset.
Maybe right we now could talk about. Have you seen these plays? Or are you familiar with this writing? Or is that all? I'm looking at you, Mr. Kensington. If this writing is, I mean, are these things that would end up getting sort of worked into Gobstopper, a treaty, or Tristes, or are these other works which are yet to be released?
These are other works. Most of us in the Wanzelology community know of these works, but very, very few of them have made it outside of the family. I really don't know
or is it NASA who's actually keeping these things under lock and key?
Last time I heard with my inquiries, they were within the family, and there was, I believe, they were in discussion to release some, produce some, perhaps?
That is true. We do have a large library of unreleased archives of some a lot of the writings, some actual audio recordings, letters back and forth, correspondences.
Audio recordings from Mars?
He apparently had a tape recorder with him. Isn't that right?
Yeah, we had a number of media related items on his spaceship. We actually asked him to bring back some of the Eisenheimers, these small creatures, back with him, and some of them survived the trip. Others were quite upset and died from shock through the trip, but he became friendly with them, and they influenced his life, as I say, with these plays that they put on their planet.
Were the Eisenheimers used in later genetic testing with other subjects? I don't mean to get off the topic of Wanzel, but just a quick question.
We used them briefly, but they weren't very interesting. So we just kind of threw them in a...
Fascinating. Well,
in a hut.
Doctor, after the show, we'll have to talk about this, your poisoning permitting.
I'm sorry.
I just want to get out there while we have a second, I have a book coming out, which was written by myself and co-authored by the great Hal Lindsey. It's entitled "Growing Up Wanzel." It's my biography. It's about my encounters with my great grandfather, who I really did not spend a lot of time with, but who has imparted me with a great with a pride for my heritage.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Roger. You know, I'm truly sorry to interrupt, but do you mean John's dad?
Oh yes, that's what I meant. It was it's a slip.
Okay.
He certainly was a great man, and your grandfather.
Well, yes, which so. that's why I'm asking.
Yes.
So in his early 20s, John Wanzel moves to New York, ends up as falling in with the mob until he's kidnapped by NASA and sent to Mars. This is all really, fascinating material, and I'm wondering, it's hard to deny the validity of any book written by Hal Lindsey or co-written with him, but I'm curious about...
Exactly.
Pardon me?
Exactly.
Oh, no, fascinating.
Late great planet Earth quality.
I would have to agree with that.
Yeah.
I'm curious I'll throw this to you, Mr. Kensington. You're a writer and a Wanzelologist.
Indeed. Guilty on both counts.
When can we look for a biography? Just because, we've got about 20 minutes left in the program, and I don't think that we're going to be able to get through everything. When can we look for the detailed analysis that this man needs, and how much of this is being held up by either NASA or the Wanzello family's refusal to admit people into the archives?
Well, I'm I don't want to give too much away, or should I say my publishers don't want me to give too much away, but there is a major, it'll be a multi-volume biography we're putting together. I'll be hopefully this isn't saying too much, I'll hopefully be editing with a team of other luminant members of the Wanzelology community, putting something out we're hoping for 2008.
What's the Wanzello family?
Well, as the heir to John Wanzel's estate, you know, we have a responsibility to protect his legacy and to ensure that it's going to be delivered accurately, and that the estate continues to profit off of John Wanzel and his legacy.
Well, that's actually an interesting question that we're going to have to try and get to before the end of the program, which is, in fact, is John Wanzel still alive?
No, he's dead.
I say yes.
And it clearly is the debate, but it actually brings me to a question for the doctor. Why was John Wanzel, or is John Wanzel still, morbidly afraid of nuns and Cocker Spaniels? And secondly, because I think as a follow-up, is mortality limiting for John, or do you think that he's capable of, given the alien DNA and his ability to regenerate his organs, or to what extent do you think those experiments succeeded? And is it possible for him to die, or do you think he would sort of transform into another life form, perhaps, say, a color?
Well, those are many questions, and I can answer some of them. First of all, the phobia about the nuns and Cocker Spaniels goes back to an incident. I'm afraid I have to go back to his early 20s again for this. There was a brief period where he was obsessed with the actress Shirley Jones, star of the musical Oklahoma and the mother of the TV family Partridge.
Well, which of us can't, admit to having been obsessed with Shirley Jones?
I mean, she was.
She was pretty.
She was quite exciting. And at a time of weak and infantile female leads, Shirley stood apart with her rebellious, shark-toothed grin and gender-bending, short-haired look, to mention nothing of her skin-tight pantsuits. But this obsession turned ugly when, after receiving 87 letters from John, Ms. Jones got angry. It started with threatening phone calls to John's family. Eventually, her gang of personal bodyguards, these martial arts-trained ninjas that were dressed just for her own amusement as nuns, began following him home from school. And one night, she turned on these maniacs and hurled a hand-carved spearhead at one of the nuns. And then when one fell, the other nuns launched a fierce attack. Many of John's bones were broken, resulting in a distinctive bend to his neck that he still has to this day. When he awoke, battered and bleeding, with an autographed photo of Shirley Jones thrown on his bloody T-shirt, he turned to his dog, Shirley, and who sat obediently at his side. However, the dog loved nuns, who would have thought, and thought that this master must have done something horrible to the nuns to make them so angry. So he bit down on the fleshy part of his palm with real, gusto. And his heart was broken, and this trauma was to accompany him for the rest of his life. So you can imagine, the nuns and the Cocker Spaniel combined is just severe. As far as the transcending of human,
you just thing. Made reference to, and I Shirley noticed,
Jones.
I noticed Stanislav Wanzello, disagreeing, but you just made reference to Mr. Wanzel, to John Wanzel still being alive. Which again is something that I hope that we'll get to. But so the notion of mortality, is it possible for John Wanzel to die?
Well, this gets into some of his telepathic abilities, which continue, I believe, to increase. although I haven't seen him in years, of course, so I don't know for sure. But what I found was I had a special film. It was treated in a way, and it enables me to sort of see people's mental auras, if you will, or mental projections. And I noticed that some of the auras came right out of his head, but then others would sort of, you know, like blow up, like quite a ways from his head. So it was like his thoughts were having a life of their own, in a way. And so I believe that his telepathic abilities enabled him to sort of transcend a physical form, but whether they could exist independently of his physical self is something I'm not sure about. But it does lend itself to the possibility of a type of immortality.
Now there was another scoff there from Stanislav. There have been also, there are many rumors on the internet and the conspiracy theorists. There are claims about John Wanzel's telepathic capabilities and other, do you, again, those seem like things which could have genetically been passed down to you, so I look to you as the sort of expert in this area, but do you agree or do you disagree? Do you want to just, your argument is that your grandfather, John Wanzel, was purely mortal.
My argument is that my grandfather was a man, and he was a great man and a genius at best, but he was not telepathic. He was not an alien. He did not have alien blood. Whatever tests NASA conducted on John, they didn't turn him into a mutant. My grandfather was not a mutant. That I know for certain.
Well, let's jump ahead a little bit, I think, to some of his his 20s. He's working predominantly for NASA, and is when I believe is when the Book of Poetry comes out. And becomes active in Zoroastrianism, but then the financial difficulty that would come from the Franklin Pierce obsession. I was wondering if maybe one of you could talk about the dandruff shampoo, and
at one point he made a mistake. He made a purchase of a very costly, expensive purchase of what turns out to be a fake copy of FP's golf clubs and dandruff shampoo, which was invented by Thomas Edison. And this set him back quite a bit. He had acquired a good amount of money due to his investments and his expertise, his genius with economics. But his obsession with Franklin Pierce got in the way of his career and his investments. And so he took a large fall with that.
But then he also took a large fall. I think it was about this time with the diamond mining adventure in the Ozarks.
This was another big mistake. He met a woman who was to become his first wife, Greta Wanzel. It's believed that a large part of his interest in her was that she looked a lot like Martha Washington, and of course he had an obsession with all of these presidential people. He actually called her Martha as a kind of a pet name, and she was not very fond of that. But then she turned out to be somewhat of a gold digger, and she basically took all of his inheritance, blew it on jewelry and these terrible investment ideas, one of which basically just diminished his entire estate, diamond mining in the Ozark Mountains.
Is he continuing to work for NASA this whole time, or is this more sort of simultaneous with the race car
This was right around the time that he was gaining interest in the race car business. If it wasn't for this financial failure, he probably wouldn't have ever become a race car driver. which it's sort of a good thing, you know, if you think about it that way. But, you know, of course, now we know that the Ozark Mountains are too long and too short to contain any diamonds. But Greta Wanzel, she was determined to spend every penny John had to prove that there were diamonds in those mountains.
Yes, so, and the cutbacks that NASA, you know, after the Apollo program kind of fizzled out, we just had to cut them loose. We couldn't afford it anymore. It was too expensive.
So then can we maybe talk about when John finally does come back into, when your grandfather finally comes back into money through the Abacus business and Wanzel properties?
Well, he basically struck gold when he invented the Flintstone-themed Abacus. He got the idea, of course, from the Flintstone vitamins, and it turned out that this was actually a really excellent idea. It was an abacus that, you know, all the little beads were shaped like Flintstone characters, you know, Barney and Betty and, you know, all those people.
And
is this actually still available through my company, Wanzel Properties, by the way. If you would like to purchase one, you know, you can visit our website.
When does he, is this about when he's marries your grandmother?
This was actually about 5 or maybe 10 years before. Yeah.
So then, I'm curious to get to the zoo, and then of course how that relates to his relationship with Paul Allen. But if you could talk maybe a little bit about his meeting of, There's a couple of years where it's understood. I mean, he just has this tendency to disappear periodically, right? I mean,
and nobody really knows where he goes,
which ultimately leads to the speculation that he's still alive, but that he's probably in Brazil for a couple of years before. Is that where he met your grandmother? Was in Brazil?
No, I'm. It's really not certain where he met my grandmother, but he did spend some time in Brazil, where he became sort of like a deity down there. Like, basically, there was a prophecy about the coming of this, you know, this basically a genius, and he becomes like a spiritual leader for them, and so he spends a number of years down there, basically wandering around in the jungle and preaching his philosophy, and then for some reason he just decides to return.
Well, let's jump ahead a little bit because we're running short of time, and I mean he's barely 40 at this point. So maybe I can ask you, Mr. Kensington, to talk about, because I know that you've done some extensive writing on Paul Allen, and if you could talk about Paul Allen, of course, the co-founder of Microsoft, and his relation to John Wanzel, who of course was known as predominantly being an Apple user. But if you could talk about
We all know, you know, there are basically two camps within the Wanzelology community. Those that are interested in his ESP and psychic abilities, and those, like myself, that are more interested into his hard science research. He spent most of his life on and off with all these other great endeavors, researching, you know, the space-time continuum, amongst other things. It was at age 40, though, that research finally really began to pay off.
Was this about the same time as the publication of Gobstopper?
It was.
Okay.
This was not that he got anywhere close to solving the problem. The time-space continuum would, of course, remain a mystery to this day to him. But this would really give him something to talk about at bars and parties, and it came in quite handy when he had a chance meeting with Paul Allen, as you mentioned, the co-founder of Microsoft. Allen was just taken by John's theories, and he funded most of John's experiments and an expedition to the Antarctic in search of the Stargate. It turns out that Paul Allen has, for many years, really wanted to find the Stargate. Forbes magazine would later claim that Allen had finally lost it. Allen would, of course, fall to his death during the expedition. John will lose 4 of his toes. Those toes, of course, remain lost, as does the Stargate.
And so he returns from the Antarctic.
He does, and
it's during his 43rd year, and this is the period of time that I find particularly interesting. It's his midlife crisis finally rears its ugly head, if you will. Many of his friends thought that he'd just buy a sports car or get a tattoo like everybody else. They'd be surprised. No one saw it coming when John just bought outright the Society for Creative Anachronism. In a nationally televised debate, I should probably tell everybody that Society for Creative Anachronism, in case you don't know, which I find nearly impossible.
The Renaissance Fair people.
The medieval reenactors. But in the nationalized televised, press conference, John would announce that he'd consolidated all of the kingdoms of the SCA, and he would be transforming it into something akin to the WWE. He was quoted, and I love this quote, he was quoted as saying, "We will be duct tape warriors no more." His WrestleMania-styled show debuted on Bravo. He was, of course, quickly sued by the producers of The Cable Guy, as well as the Medieval Times Corporation. John announced he would only settle all problems on the battlefield.
This is when people are starting to think that he's just lost it.
Yeah, pretty much. And the Cable Guys decided they'd play along and, offered to joust, but John would have none of it. Field of battle or nothing, he remarked. He was, of course, buoyed by legions of Dungeons & Dragons players. Of course, they were little help, as they were blinded by the sun, as this was the first time that they had come out of their mom's basements in quite a long time. Not to mention that their dice need hard surfaces like TV trays to be of any use. The battle was unfortunately a rout. Duct tape, dice everywhere. But it's after the SCA fiasco that John decides he's going to invade Canada. And that's where I believe he is to this day, with the remnants of his army trying to get... I know that the roller derby girls and some Lebanese cab drivers are all on his side. He's somewhere in northern Minnesota
plotting his comeback. I would have to agree with that, because during the period where he was having difficult funding his space explorations, I decided to secretly make him a Canadian citizen so he would have health care in his later years. So I believe he adopted that nationality
now,
to help pay for his activities.
Mr. Wanzello, your thoughts on your grandfather, and you stand by the fact that he passed away.
We believe that he was assassinated by the Canadians during this time where he was trying to invade Canada.
But the body has never been found.
The body has never completely been found. We've found sections of his body, charred sections. He was assassinated.
Everything but the crotch.
Everything. Well, the crotch we have. The head, unfortunately, we don't have.
Well, I've got to say that the hour is coming to an end, and it's been a fascinating conversation. That we've only scratched the surface of this amazing man, John Wanzell, really one of the true Renaissance men of America has ever produced.
If I could just say one last thing, I would like to encourage everyone out there who's interested in John Wanzell to do as he did and keep reaching for the stars.
And go to johnwanzell.com.
And I would like to make sure that everyone goes out and picks up a copy of my upcoming book, Growing
and
Up Wanzello.
Please look for a cure for my luminous toxin.
I would like to thank Stanislav Wanzello, John Wanzell's grandson, for coming in. And as you mentioned, the book which he has written is called Growing Up Wanzell. We should also look out for Lefty Kensington's multi-volume biography.
It's going to be great.
Coming out in a couple of years. And Mr. Schrode, I hope that...
You should probably look for my body by tomorrow morning about 6 a.m.
I'll probably be
right out here, right outside the campus.
I hope your death is a painless one.
Thank you.
For Blind Spot, I'm Roger McYellowstone. Thank you. Thank you for listening.
For more information about Blind Spot, please visit our website at stopgostop.com/blindspot. Each week we create a unique live radio experience right here, live on air, on 88.7 WLUW Chicago. Thank you for listening. This has been Blind Spot.